Today's program is brought to you by Egg Restaurant, located at 109 North 3rd Street in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, visit eggrestaurant.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We are coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, January 25th, 2017. This is the 130th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a top hospitality consultant based on the West Coast, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to make things happen for yourself. If you have a passion and desire to create something, take action and don't let anyone or anything get in your way. By putting forth your best effort, you can achieve whatever you set your mind to. Don't wait to rely on others. Instead, seize opportunities for yourself. With hard work, you can make your dreams a reality. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very happy to have my guest calling in today from San Francisco. It is Allison Arth. She is the founder of Salt & Row, a hospitality consulting company, which she founded in 2014. A graduate of Cornell University's School of Hotel Administration, Allison began her career at Daniel Ballou's Dynex Group in an operations-focused leadership role, and she authored her first book, How to Open a Restaurant in Partnership with Open Table, in February 2016, which is really cool. So welcome, Allison.
Thank you so much, Sherry. I am thrilled to be on the show with you today.
Well, I'm thrilled, too. I'm glad we can make this happen, and I'm just excited to learn more about your whole career, because what the little I know is very impressive. So I like to start it out with you're welcome. I like to start out with people's backgrounds. And from a longer bio I read of you, of yours, it said that you were raised in a bed or on a bed and breakfast. Is it in a bed of breakfast, on a bed of breakfast? So
either one.
So let's start there. A little bit about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. I fell in love with hospitality at a really young age. As you mentioned, I did grow up in a bed and breakfast that my parents ran out of my childhood home in San Francisco. And as a result, taking care of other people as if, you know, they're a part of our family was just sort of how we did things in our house. I absolutely loved meeting new people from all over the world. And I remember even as a kid, I thought it was so special that all of our guests would take whatever time they had off in a year for vacation and stay not just in our city, but in our home of all places. And I still feel that same sense of gratitude and desire to take care of other people working in hospitality as an adult. Culinarily, my mother is a fantastic cook with a profound appreciation for food. And so the kitchen was unquestionably the heartbeat of our home. Everything important happened there. And I think, in a way, I grew up believing that everything important just in general happened in kitchens. And so I tried to always stay close to them, as close as I could. I was really passionate about pastry when I was in middle school and high school, and worked at a bakery in Berkeley for a bit when I was a teenager. And for whatever reason, the kitchen just didn't feel like my professional calling so much as something that I really loved, perhaps waking up at 3 a.m. over summer break as a 15-year-old scared me away for life, but I don't know.
I hear you.
so I took my career in a bit of a different direction, but still very much revolving around hospitality and restaurants and food.
So you went to Cornell, and I mean, was that like your school of preference, obviously, because you were interested in culinary? And then how did you end up going from there to Danielle Ballou as your first job?
Honestly, I look back at my 16, 17-year-old years and am kind of shocked by my conviction at that age that hospitality was the way to go. I knew that I loved food. I knew that I loved restaurants. Until I visited Cornell and learned about the program, which I didn't know existed until my junior year of high school, I hadn't really considered it as a career. I don't know what I thought I was going to do, but when I found out about that program, I just completely fell in love, and everything else that I had been considering up until that point completely faded away, and I decided pretty quickly that that's what I wanted to pursue, and that was the education that I wanted to pursue to achieve it. And my path to Dynex came through Cornell as well. I met a couple of Dynex executives during my final semester there. I traveled to New York, I think, with like a restaurant entrepreneurship class, and met Ryan Butner and Brett Trucy, who I know is one of your guests a little while back.
Yes.
And we really connected. I kind of lucked out because I graduated early and I got to sneak out ahead of the rest of my classmates in 2008, which was a particularly competitive year in terms of job hunting.
Right.
I knew I wanted to work for a serious, highly respected restaurant group. And I honestly don't think I could have landed with a better family of people. When I arrived there, I went through pretty intense management training, which consisted of working every single front of house position throughout Danielle's restaurants in New York. And once I worked my way through that, I joined the opening management team of DBGB. Which was thrilling to me because in college I'd spent nearly every summer doing restaurant openings, and I was already addicted at a very young age. And once I was a bit more immersed into the Dynex family, I learned pretty quickly that the process of opening restaurants tends to be quite polarizing. People love them or hate them, and there's not a lot of in between. And I was one of the few people on that team that really loved them. So I found a niche right away, and sort of started my path with them and opening restaurants. DBGB was Danielle's first restaurant downtown. It was a casual place, which is one of his first in that area as well. And then I moved uptown to Cafe Ballou to earn my fine dining stripes and helped them lead the team through Cafe Ballou's reopening, and then moved over to the Upper West Side to work on Ballou's food and a Pizzeria Ballou.
Yeah, Danielle Ballou's restaurant group is, I mean, they're all unique restaurants and places that I love and would love to frequently visit. And I remember the opening of DBGB, and I remember the relaunch of Cafe Ballou, and all these things got a lot of buzz and were very successful launches. So kudos to you. And
Thank you.
You're welcome. I figure. So, I mean, your role with Dynex Group became doing a lot of these launches, and then, or were there other elements, and did you work, I'm assuming it was a part of a larger team too, or did you work more independently on some of these, in your role?
I wore a lot of different hats there. So in all of these openings, I was integrated with the opening management teams, and I was usually the person that was there for the shortest amount of time and would really focus on doing pre-opening planning, staff hiring, staff training, and then getting the management team in the restaurant on its feet and really comfortable before I would move on to the next opening. And that's what I did restaurant after restaurant after restaurant. I never really had an official title in that capacity. I just loved doing openings. And then after a Pizzeria Blue, I moved into, you know, what I'll call a project management role that was essentially my dream job. I got to work with so many different teams at the corporate level and with all of the restaurants, doing things like developing a gift box program for a Pizzeria Blue from the ground up and taking our first steps into e-commerce at that time. And in so many ways, I feel like my consulting business was born out of my love for that position. All project-based work. It was a lot of dealing with fires, dealing with problems, and dealing with new restaurants, which are really all of my favorite things.
Yeah, well, that leads me to my next question. So what prompted you to leave and open your own consulting business and be on the West Coast? Which when you're moving back to the West Coast, who were some of the initial clients that you worked with?
Well, when I first moved back to San Francisco, I worked at a few different restaurants, you know, not under the guise of consulting. I worked with the Delfino Restaurant Group as a general manager, which was a great experience. And then
I've been there. Great pizza. Sorry.
What was that?
I said, I've been there. It's good. Great pizza.
Great pizza. Oh, my goodness. And they've opened so many more pizzerias. I think they have their eyes set on L.A. as well. So pizza for everybody. Very exciting. Yeah. So I was with them for a bit, and then I was the director of food and beverage for a private members club called The Battery, which I would describe as San Francisco's answer to the Soho House.
Okay.
And I was there for about a year and a half, and just kind of figured out at the end of it that I love developing and opening hospitality concepts. I love working to fix brokenness. I love project-based work, and those roles within larger companies and restaurant groups are hard to come by. There aren't a lot of places that I'd be interested in working that have room for a person that's dedicated just to that type of work. So I decided it was a worthy risk to try and create that role for myself by starting my own company focused on providing those specific services. You know, if it didn't work out, I didn't have a ton to lose. So it felt like the right step. And some of my first clients in San Francisco were, you know, one really significant one was Tracy Desjardins, who has been a friend and a mentor for a very long time. I interned for her at Chardonnay when I was 17, I think, and over 10 years later, she's a client of mine. And, you know, I'm very, very grateful to work with her.
Yeah, so I don't know her personally, but I know who she is, and it's that's a good client to have.
Yeah.
And then I've also I know you would know Gavin Kaysen from Cafe Baloo and working mm-hmm. with the Dynex Group, and he launched his first restaurant, Spoon and Stable, in Minneapolis, and I saw you were a part of that project. So How was working with Gavin on that?
Oh, that was such a special project. Gavin was my first client. Gavin and I have known each other for 10 years now. We worked together at Cafe Blue for a couple of years, and then after I left that restaurant, we continued to work with each other in various capacities while I was at Dynex. And he and I have we've always had a particularly effective working relationship. I just think that our skill sets complement each other really well. Personally, I mean, he's family to me. I just think he's such an exceptional leader and an exceptional person. And so when he made the decision to leave New York and go back to Minneapolis and open his very first place, it just felt natural that we would do it together. And, you know, so flattering and complimentary that he gave me the opportunity to do that. And it also felt like the perfect first consulting project. I definitely credit him with being one of a small handful of people that really pushed me off the cliff when I was making the decision to start this company. So thank you to Gavin for that. And The project itself, I mean, Spoon and Stable, I don't know if you've had the opportunity to visit.
I haven't, and I really would like to go. I'm a huge fan of Gavin as a chef and a person too. I think mm-hmm. he's incredible, and everything I've seen about the restaurant just looks awesome, and I'm very happy for him. And yes, I'm planning a trip. Maybe not in winter though.
Yeah, good call. Spoon and Stable opened in November, and it was cold. One of the longer winters of my life.
Right.
But it's a fantastic restaurant, and the team that works with him there is just, you know, second to none in so many ways. He's just surrounded by a group of people that were so hungry for someone like him to set up shop in that city and inspire and challenge and push. And he's doing all those things with some really great people, and I'm so happy to be a part of it. And I'll actually be headed out there in just about a month to help him open his second restaurant in Minneapolis again.
Right, I read something about that. He's starting to grow into a bigger restaurant group, which is exciting to have more
Very
than one.
Very exciting.
So that's great. Okay, we're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to come back and talk more with Allison. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Brought to you by Egg Restaurant. For over 10 years, Egg has focused on making the best breakfasts in New York, with a menu that combines southern-inflected classics like biscuit, grits, and country ham, with dishes like duck hash, chorizo, and eggs, pancakes dripping with Vermont maple syrup, and more vegetables than you ever dreamed of eating before noon. But what gets them up every morning at Egg is something different. It's the chance to improve everything they encounter, the lives of the people who work with them, the lives of their customers, the health of their local economy, and the soil their food is grown in. Their interest in food goes way beyond what they put on your plate. Food touches on everything they care about: flavor, health, social justice, art and literature, agriculture and ecology. It's one of the reasons Egg Restaurant is so happy to support Heritage Radio, who digs into everything that matters every week. For more information, visit eggrestaurant.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Allison Arth. She's the founder of Salt and Row, a hospitality consulting company based in San Francisco. So, Allison, how'd you come up with the name Salt and Row?
Salt and Row does have a specific significance. I think of salt as being one of the most, if not the most, fundamental ingredients in cooking. In my mind, a chef can buy the highest quality proteins and produce and spend hours preparing and perfecting each one, but ultimately, without salt, a dish just doesn't come together. It won't taste right. I feel the same way when it comes to establishing organizational systems and clearly communicating the vision of a restaurant. A restaurant can have incredible talent, an unlimited budget, a beautiful space, but without a solid foundation supported by structure and thoughtful, consistent training, it can't reach its full potential. So that's the first half of the name. Row is my mother's last name. I alluded to her when I spoke about the bed and breakfast mm-hmm. at the beginning of our conversation. She's an extraordinary woman, an exemplary hospitalitarian. She's just the ultimate caretaker. And she has had and continues to have a really big impact on me. And since we don't share a last name, it felt appropriate and important to include it in this way.
That's a great answer. I love it. No, it's a great name. So with your services, I know you do things like operation strategy and management and hospitality training. On each client, is it a little different, the services you're providing? And do you have a team with you, or is it you solo right now doing all of these tasks?
You hit the nail on the head. Services I provide are really grounded in front of house operations with a specific depth in the opening process. What I ultimately end up doing is so dependent on who the client is and what their needs are and how our relationship develops. I don't think I've ever worked with a client where we accomplished exactly what we thought we were going to accomplish at the beginning. It almost always evolves into something much bigger and more dynamic, which is exciting for me because I think there's lots of learning on both sides. And as far as who's actually doing the work, it's me. I have some support from like partner companies that I work with, but as far as Salton Row, it is a solo venture right now, which is kind of fun.
I'm solo, so I get it.
Yeah.
It's nice to provide a personalized service, and it is a lot of work too. So
yes, it is.
So I had some great questions from my past guests for you. So I want to get to them.
Okay. Yeah.
So the first one on episode 128, I had on Nick Kokonis. He's the co-owner and co-founder of Alinea Next, the Aviary, and Royster, and he's the CEO of Talk, which is a comprehensive reservation booking system. So Nick wanted to know, what's the difference between the two coasts in terms of restaurants?
That is a great question.
Yes.
As a disclaimer, I've spent time all over the East and West Coast, but I've only ever lived in San Francisco and New York. So, you know, that's where my opinions of both coasts are sort of based. I think there's a natural tendency here in California and Oregon and Washington as well, to see restaurants and menus that celebrate ingredients rather than celebrating on the manipulation of those ingredients or focusing on culinary technique. Not that either of those are absent, it's just not usually the focus of a concept. I think that theme is present on the East Coast, you know, local food and that whole movement, but less dominant out of necessity. So that's one thing. Personally, I believe that the East Coast has a greater appreciation for hospitality and the art of service than the West Coast does. I couldn't tell you exactly why that is, but I think it has to do with the more sort of nonchalant, casual, almost rejection of formality here. And in San Francisco specifically, I would add that I think the restaurant scene is less, I think it's less diverse than it is in New York because of the changing demographics here and really the preferences of that demographic, which right now is a lot of people involved in the tech industry.
Right. Well, that's an excellent answer. I mean, all good points. His other question was, when are you going to work together?
Which is such an exciting question.
It is. It's a great one.
You saw from our social media yesterday on Facebook. We've already got it covered. It's in the works.
Well, I'm glad if this show can do anything to unite people or help them connect, then I feel I'm doing my job. So I look forward to see what that possible collaboration might be. Now, the other question I had on episode 129, I had on Dana Cowan. She's the creative director at the Chef's Club International, and she's former editor-in-chief at Food & Wine magazine and the host of a new show on Heritage Radio Network called Speaking Broadly. So Dana wanted to know, what's the most extraordinary cheap meal you've ever had?
Another great question, and, you know, Dana Cowan hardly needs introduction. She's so fabulous, and I'm just
such a
fan of hers. I would say all manner of street food in Mexico City. I visited recently, just in November, and I can think of a couple of particularly revelatory experiences. One was a taco, the other was a huarache, and both, I think, were about $1.25. But I mean, you know, that first taco I had, you know, we landed, tired. It was kind of cold. And I bought a taco at a street stand. And it was just, like, mind-blowing, like, completely mind-blowing. And the next day I woke up and I was like, you know what, maybe my opinion is being influenced by the circumstances. You know, I was tired and so anything would have tasted good. So I continued to try out just about every single street food stand I could get my hands on in Mexico City and proved that it was not the circumstances. Everything is just fantastic.
That's a great answer. Mexico City's also on my list of places to visit. I could see that. I mean, you did, that meal definitely qualifies as being inexpensive, and I could see how it would be great. So awesome. So let's talk a little about this first book that you wrote, How to Open a Restaurant in Partnership with Open Table. I downloaded it because it's online and was skimming through, and I went all the way down to the PR section, of course, to see what was in there. I saw Georgette Farkas. You had offering some insight, but what an amazing tool! I was really impressed. I need to go back and read this whole thing. So, how? I mean, it looked like a huge project to put that together.
It was.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
It was, and it was such a fun project, and I'm so happy to hear that even, you know, after some quick skimming, it felt practical to you.
Absolutely.
But the book landed in my court through my relationship with Jennifer Pelka, who was Danielle's culinary assistant when I started at Dynex, and she and I have been personally and professionally very close since then. She made many other stops before landing on Open Table's marketing team, and this ebook, this How to Open a Restaurant ebook, was her idea to help Open Table add value to their brand by offering a really practical resource on a topic that many people need help navigating, and there's not a lot out there in the way of instructional tools. And it was such a great fit for me because it's my ultimate passion, and it was an immense amount of work, and it was a very new type of work for me, for someone who's used to running around a restaurant all day long. Conducting interviews with incredible people was far and away the best part of the whole experience, to just get to pick the brains of all of these chefs and restaurateurs who are so disarmingly honest with me about their experiences, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then taking all that information and sitting down and, like, locking myself in a room and writing all day every day was totally foreign and really hard. But I learned a lot from it, and I'm really happy with how it came out. So I'm glad to hear you feel the same.
Oh, yeah. I'm really impressed with it. I'm going to go back and read the whole thing. I mean, kudos to you, because I think writing a book is hard, and with all that information. And I suggest anyone to go check this out. I know there's a link through your website that people can find it. So I'll give the info at the end of the show. It's great. Okay, we're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to play my speedrun game and talk some industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Allison Arth. Allison, it is time for my speed round game. Are you ready?
Oh my goodness. I hope so.
it's fun. There's no right or wrong. What it is I'm going to name a couple things, and you pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Okay.
Okay. So here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Oh, cocktail followed by wine. I can't choose there.
Ooh, I like that. That's a first on that answer. How about tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Oh, always a counter. Love a counter.
I love a counter, too. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
I'm going to go hospitality included.
All righty. Pottery Barn or Crate and Barrel?
Crate and Barrel. Everyone's answer. It's objectively superior.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. How about working with individual restaurants or with restaurant groups? It might be a tricky one.
Oh, that's so tricky. That's impossible. They're fun for different reasons. I think, you know, in my heart, it's probably independent restaurants. I find those projects to be, I think, the most personally rewarding. But I do love the challenges that come with working with growing restaurant groups.
Great. Okay, two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Geez, that's the hardest one yet. probably cheese.
Okay. I'm not going to hold you to this. I mean, but okay. It's good to know you like cheese. Last one, Manhattan, Brooklyn, or San Francisco?
Oh, man, I think I have to say Manhattan.
Woohoo!
I love my home city, but I think Manhattan still has my heart.
Okay, I'll take it. And that's the game. So it's time. We're going to talk some industry news. So the article I picked out was on Food Republic, the title, The Way to Save the Restaurant Industry, that's a question mark, Put the Fast in Fine Dining. And this was by Andrea Strong. And Andrea's been, I mean, Andrea's, it's nice she's writing more now. She's actually someone who's kind of like the first food blogger credited from a long time ago. She's been a writer, and then she got married, had kids, and wasn't writing as much. So anyway, she wrote this great article, and it's talking about fast fine, which is fast fine dining in San Francisco, and some examples of restaurants like Corridor and Zuvla, which I know you know about through Jen Pelka, and this concept that there's no waiters in a service style that you're ordering at a counter, and it's more getting rid of the service staff, but at the same time keeping the high level of the experience with the decor and the playlists and the flatware and everything else they're doing, just kind of changing the service. So perfect topic to talk to someone like you about.
Absolutely. I was really happy to see this article for a number of reasons. I also love Andrea Strong's writing, and I remember getting her newsletter. I think it was called The Strong Report.
The Strong Buzz.
The Strong Buzz, uh-huh. That's what it was. I remember reading it avidly, so it's great to see her writing again. I think she's very talented. And this is such an of-the-moment topic, and you know, I'm kind of hesitant to even call it a trend because I do think that it's something that's going to continue to evolve and grow for all of the reasons that Andrea suggests in her article, the cost of labor, changing preferences of customers. And I will say that I think that this is something that's been particularly welcome and embraced in San Francisco. The demographics of the city have changed a lot. And as the tech landscape continues to broaden here, I do think that a majority of the people eating out in San Francisco value efficiency, control, and lower prices versus having a more robust service experience. I don't see as significant of a shift in New York, but you know, the tip credit is going away there, or it's gone away, and minimum wage is going to keep rising everywhere. So I imagine that we'll start seeing more and more SaaS fines. But I do think the West Coast is particularly well positioned to sort of take it and run with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, though I think I took away the biggest point being the cost of labor and that this combats it, and that in San Francisco there isn't the tip credit, and for those reasons why this is catching on. And then it cited how Daniel Hume and Will Guderra's Made Nice might be doing something a little more in this direction, and also how Dig In, Fast Casual is kind of going that way. But I was brainstorming myself and trying to think, do we have that in New York? And I don't think we do yet. The only thing I could think of was how there's been a lot of the food halls that have opened recently, which I think is kind of like a similar strategy. And those have been, I mean, we've had a tremendous amount of them open in New York City and be very successful. So I'm curious to see, you know, if this does keep catching on and become, you know, more prevalent here in New York and elsewhere. So
yeah, I am too. I think it's a great trend. I love Zula. I do think that there's a time and place for that type of service, though, and Zula is an example of one that it's really well suited to. You know, it's a beautiful space, and it's such an easy service experience. As you know, Charles has said, it's a place that still feels appropriate for a date, but it's without a more robust service experience. I worry about seeing that trend move into restaurant concepts that maybe are less well suited for a really stripped down service model, and then you kind of get a lack of cohesion between the space and the quality of the food, the level of complexity of the food and the service. But yeah, I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, me too. And when I was in San Francisco last year, I did go to Zula, but it was a gorgeous day, and I ordered. I mean, there was a line at the front where you ordered from someone who had an iPad and took orders, and then I just took it to go and sat outside. So I didn't. I mean, I was in. I saw the space, and it was very lovely. And it was happening. It was very popular. So
yeah.
I know they've been successful and are opening many locations, or they have more than one now, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's about to open number 3.
Okay. Yeah, no, so it's cool. So that's, stay tuned to see if this is a trend and keeps growing. And then before we take a break, I just have some breaking news. So today, Bocuse d'Or competition, the finals in Lyon, France, were happening, and Team USA won the gold. Did you know?
Yeah.
Did you see this?
Yeah, I've been texting with Gavin all day. So thrilled!
It's
such a big deal.
It's huge. It's amazing. I mean, for people listening to the show, Gavin Kaysen, you know, he's been involved in this and coaching now, and this is the U.S. team with Thomas Keller and Daniel Blue and Jerome Bocuse behind it and training, and they've worked really hard to place, and they did not only place, they got first place. So it's kudos. Really exciting. And I'm excited to announce on February 15th, I've already booked Phil Tessier and Matt Peters. Phil is the coach of the team, and Matt is the chef for 2017. So they're going to be on my show. So I'm going to talk with them, and I'm just thrilled for them. So congratulations. And on that note, we are going to take another break and come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. This week, it's at Itza. Here's the rundown. The location, 285 Madison Avenue at 40th Street, New York City. The concept, a fully automated fast food chain serving freshly made and customized quinoa bowls. Why did I go? Because I wanted to see if this was the future of dining. My experience. So on a rainy late Friday afternoon, I entered the space to find that I was actually the only one there. It was a kind of off time. There was a worker there who offered to assist me if I had questions. The process: order at one of the iPad kiosks, wait for your name to appear on one of the glass cubbies in the back wall, retrieve your order from a cubby by double tapping on the door, get your utensils from this fancy dispenser, and then take a seat and eat. What did I get? So I went with the Toscana bowl with warm lemon herb toasted quinoa, basil, pesto, roasted winter squash, roots, cauliflower, plus it had Parmesan, fried spaghetti, pumpkin seeds, minestrone, and parsley, and I had a glass of water. So my take: it was actually quite tasty and fresh and very filling. Now, I would preferred less of that of all the ingredients. I felt I didn't need the minestrone and cheese and would have preferred more vegetables, but I was impressed with the freshness, and it was delicious. The ambiance: it's a highly automated, bright space with minimalistic decor, perfect for a casual vegetarian meal. Interesting tidbit: Itza is dubbed as the first fast food chain in America that requires zero human interaction. It started on the West Coast with locations in San Francisco and LA. The food is prepared by humans, but because they're behind the cubbies, you don't see them. Personal fun fact: if you saw my Instagram story, which I did while I was there, it took me 3 times to tap on my cubby door to get it to open. I don't know, I had trouble with that, but I guess it made for a good video. The cost was $6.95, not including tax. Would I go back? Yes, I'd try it again, maybe another bowl next time I'm in the neighborhood. Website is itza.com. So, Allison, are you familiar with Itza?
I am familiar with Itza. We have, I think, one location here, and I had every intention of visiting it, but it's right next to Yank Thing, which is probably one of the best dim sum restaurants in San Francisco. So my intentions were thwarted.
I hear you.
When I headed down there to give it a shot. It was kind of an easy decision. I couldn't do it. So I've never been.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I picked this restaurant to go to for the solo dining before the article that came out about the fast fine, and just all seemed so fitting. I mean, there were people there, but it is more of a you don't need human interaction experience, mm-hmm. which is interesting. So we'll see if they open more here in New York. Okay, it's time for the final question. So my next guest is Melanie Dunia. She is an independent photographer and author who is best known for her iconic portraits of renowned chefs, celebrities, and influencers. So Allison, can you ask a question for Melanie?
Yeah, now that I know exactly who it is, I might ask two questions. My first is, what was the last dining experience Melanie had that felt really impactful, and why? And then I would be so interested to know who she's most enjoyed photographing and why.
That's great. I will ask, and I think it's fair. You give two questions because you answered two questions. So, great. Well, thank you so much. That's the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I'm really glad we connected, and I am very impressed with your career, and I wish you the best. And next time you're in New York City, let me know. Maybe we can grab a bite together. It would be great to see you in person.
Agreed. I would love that. We'll get dessert and cheese.
Oh, awesome. Because my answer is dessert, but I'm happy to share some cheese with you.
Good.
Okay, so my guest today has been Allison Arth. She's the founder of Salt and Row, a hospitality consulting company based in San Francisco. You can find her website is saltandrow.com and also on social media at Salt and Row. And Row is O-R-O-E, just for people to know. You can find me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. As a reminder, all of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes and Stitcher. And I encourage you to subscribe to our show if you like it. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also leave a review there. And you can also leave a review if you want on my Facebook page. No one's done that yet, and I just realized that. So feel free to leave your comments there. I'd like to thank my engineer, Vitor, who's new to Heritage Radio Network and doing an amazing job. I'm Sherry Bayer. I will be back next Wednesday, same time, same place, with another live show. Till then, have a good week, and thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.